Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Called Cyber Monday nowadays. We have Black Friday, then we have Cyber Monday. So welcome to all the listeners. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving if you celebrate. We are worldwide. It may not even be a holiday on the continent or island that you live on. But we're not actually going to be talking about sex so much tonight. We may talk a little bit about gender, but our topic is mostly going to be talking about children and animals. And I am really, really excited to have my good friend Peter Alexander as my personal guest tonight. He's got a brand new children's book just in time for the holidays, and it's called Moo Boo and Moo Moo. I've read the book in one sitting over my morning tea. It's just beautiful illustrations, lovely story. I can't say enough good things about it. It's a really feel-good book. So anyway, Peter and I have known each other for quite a few years. Most of our friendship has taken place over the telephone and via email. And we're always really quite amazed at how close and resonant our friendship is, despite the miles and the years that have separated us. Peter is in Thailand today. And although it's 9 o'clock here over on the North American continent, it's about 12 noon in Thailand. Peter, thank you so much for joining me in the Shame-Free Zone.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Veronica. It's a pleasure to be here with you and to have all this time to talk to you.
I'm excited about it.
So, me too.
Now, you've actually been, you had a rather illustrious career as a screenwriter. You and I have worked on some screenplays together. You made a movie. I know that you're kind of reinventing yourself. I don't know how much of the past that you want to recount, but you're welcome to do so. I'm sure people would love to know a little bit about your history before you launch into a discussion about how you are now teaching English as a second language to children and writing children's books.
Okay, well, it's quite an interesting path that I've been on. I was born in New York City. I can take you all the way back to my childhood, but the point is, I've lived
It's August 14th, 1948, which means you're a Leo.
No, Facebook has got it wrong. I'm October 7th.
You're October 7th.
October 7th.
And, oh, wow.
And Lecture Alert, who we're going to be talking about, is October 6th. And so October 7th will come up because of some very exciting things that Lecture Alert was doing in Washington, D.C. this year on October 7th. Well, we'll get to her in a second. You want a little background for your audience on me. And so I was just going to say I'm an American, and I've lived a long time, beginning in New York City, 16 years living in Washington, D.C., 4 or 5 years, I forget, in Phoenix, Arizona. Graduated from Boston University, so I lived in Boston. And then you and I sort of got together during the period that I was spending 10 years of my life in Los Angeles and 1 year in San Francisco. So I've been, and of course, now I'm in Thailand, and I'm in a small southern city, which is smaller than any place I've lived most of my life. But it's very peaceful and very friendly, and it's quite a nice change, because I also lived in Bangkok for, 8 or 9 years. So a lot of city life, and now it's I'm happy to be able to be operating out of this small city, which is mostly agricultural. And, the world has changed. We can basically be anywhere via the internet, and for my books, I have three or four different books going on right now, and my artists for these books are in Brazil, Costa Rica, and India.
Wow, you've got worldwide reach there.
Yes, it's fantastic. I love it.
Very cool. How do you like living in Thailand?
I like it very much, especially in contrast to the difficulties that are facing many Americans today, because most of my life I've been an entrepreneurial or freelance writer, and I don't know that I would be doing that well in America especially since 2007. But the interesting thing is, I was actually in New York when 9/11 happened. In fact, I was only about 15 blocks away, and in fact, I saw the second airplane right overhead when I was walking around near Broadway, and I forget exactly, it was a square. I was around Broadway and 18th, I think, something like that in New York, and I was there on movie business, and I remember I was walking, and I was looking for a place to buy a phone card, and I heard this plane rather loud, and I tilted my head up, and up, you know, stared up through the various skyscrapers there in New York City, and saw this plane, and I remember just the thought flashing, "Gosh, that's rather low," and then I went on about my business, and soon thereafter I realized what was going on at the Twin Towers,
Did you see the buildings collapse?
Yeah, I saw the second one collapse. I saw the first one collapse, yes. And I saw the second one get hit.
What was that like, Peter?
You know how many people have said this. The first flash in my mind was that, oh, it looks just like it did in the movie Independence Day.
Wow.
You know, you don't think of it as, you know, real people dying and all that sort of thing. You think of it as a movie scene. That was my first flash. And then I was amidst a lot of New Yorkers. It was a park. I'm not positive about the cross street. It was down around 18th. But Broadway, it was definitely at Broadway. And, you know, there were 25-30 people gathered in the street there watching, and some people were crying, and some people were screaming that it was the Chinese that did it. I remember that was, you know, that was quite erroneous. The aftermath was, you know, I want to get out of this place. It felt very strange, and I didn't have a lot of money at that particular time, and using the internet, I found some people that also wanted to leave New York City, and we got together, and three of us, and drove a car out of New York 6 days later after 9/11, and drove straight to Reno, Nevada.
Why there?
That's where the people who owned the car had to go. And I made my way.
I thought there was a plan, some kind of a plan behind that, but I just logistics. Gotcha.
No, I found somebody, you know, on the internet that wanted a co-driver, and it was kind of, but it's so, you know, it was so amazing, Veronica. You cross the United States 6 days after 9/11, and suddenly you see things you've never seen before. And I've, you know, lived a long time in America. But you saw the people showing the flag and cars with flags on the antennas and so forth. And you stop in little places you might never have stopped before, Des Moines, Iowa, and that sort of thing. It was kind of interesting in a strange way to be traveling across America 6 days after 9/11.
That sounds surreal, but you know, I remember, you know, I was in Maui at the time, and the entire island was in mourning. It was just, you know, a very grief-stricken time. Here we are in paradise, in an island paradise, where usually people are having fun because everybody's on vacation, or
yes.
Yeah, and it was just lots and lots of sad, long faces.
Yeah, it was surreal. That would be a very good word for it.
Yeah.
And within a year, less than a year, I was off to Thailand. It wasn't a plan exactly. Somebody, as you know, I had been I had been in Thailand, living in Thailand years before. In fact, I owned an advertising agency in Bangkok back in the 80s. So I had been there, and I had made some good connections, and somebody wanted me to do some business in Thailand, and things were a little rocky, as you may recall, in the States, so I went to Thailand, and it wasn't immediately that I found this particular niche that I'm in now, but the great thing, you know, I've been writing film scripts and freelance writing other things for many, many years. But frankly, being in Thailand, I've been able to work with, let me say this. This is how I spend my time. Half of my day, I'm alone. In my apartment, I'm on my computer, I'm writing, I'm researching, etc. In the afternoon, like 3 o'clock, I go off to teach at a private school, and I don't have to teach a big class. I have one student, or I have five students, and it's and the gamut is from 7 years old to, I don't know, 45 years old. And so I get a great variety of private students who have some of them want to come to America to study, and they need to improve their English. And some now we're getting more here in this. Your listeners might be interested in knowing the name of where I live. You can look it up on the internet. It's quite an attractive small city called Trang, T-R-A-N-G. And we don't have a lot of foreigners. I'd say there's more Brits here than Americans, and some Canadians and Australians, but not too many. And right now here in Trang, what's happening is, I don't know, some people say it's because of the fact that Thailand now has a prime minister who was well educated in London and speaks very good English, and it seems to have changed the focus of a lot of folks here to the necessity of learning English. And so now at the school the private school where I tutor, we have a lot of kids. Three, four, five, 6 years of age. I don't happen to teach that age group, but we're getting a lot of those students. So I teach in the afternoons, and I write and run Kennebec Entertainment from about 7 o'clock in the morning to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it gives me, so I'm not in complete solitude. And as you and I have discussed between us in our emails and so forth, you know, we love children, and we love animals. And so here in Thailand, they're not too well informed about how to stop overpopulation of animals. So there's a lot of street animals. So I take pleasure in, when I walk to the school where I teach, I carry food for the street animals. So a lot of things have a lot of friendships with animals. I mean, they know who I am, and they're eager to see me.
Yes. Now, the woman who this children's book is based upon, can you tell us a little about her? Because she starts off with an interest in animals as a child.
Oh my God! What a story she is! And I was mentioning to you about what happened on October 7th. So I want to tell your listeners, on October 7th, she was she was at the Cannon House office building with six other women who were being honored for, what did they call them? Women Heroes of Global Conservation, Repairing Nature, Empowering Communities. And Lek Chilert is her name. Lek is a slang for small. Her full name is Sang Duen, S-A-N-G-D-U-E-N, Chilert, C-H-A-I-L-E-R-T, and folks can certainly find a lot of stuff on the internet if they go search her name. So she was there with Dr. Wangari Maathai, the founder of the Greenbelt Movement in Kenya, and the winner of the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize, and she was there with another five women from one representing the Jane Goodall Institute in Tanzania and, you know, other countries. And they were being honored by the Pew Charitable Trusts. She got to meet, I believe she met President Obama. I know she was scheduled to. Yes, I'm pretty sure she did. And I know she met Hillary Clinton when she was there. So this all transpired in the last couple of months. And, you know, her birthday is October 6th and mine was October 7th. And so all this was happening around our birthday. So that was kind of exciting. And, but for your listeners, this is all a major miracle. It's such a miracle that I hope you will consider buying the book, that the book series that we're writing about Lech Shailert's childhood, because she was born into a remote hill tribe in northern Thailand, where even at 50 years ago, she's 50. She was 50 on October 6th, and 50 years ago she was born up there. And even today, you can't hardly get there by vehicular transportation, because I did buy clothing for the Hill Tribe kids, and I was going to take it up there personally to get to them, and then Lex said, no, we can't go because there's too much rain and the roads are too difficult, because they're dirt roads going through mountains. So here's a girl born 50 years ago in a hill tribe, which is not really that respected by Thai society in general. These are people who drifted down into Thailand from Laos and Burma and so forth. But she had a very, very special grandfather named Noom, N-O-O-M, who was a shaman for this particular tribe. It's called the Kamu tribe. That's K-H-A-M-U. Very small tribe. And they didn't have electricity. They didn't have telephones when Lech was born. They didn't have TVs, obviously. So it's very, very remote. But she had this grandfather, and as one of my books will tell the story, one that's going to come out, I think, in February, the second of the two, the second of six that are planned, her grandfather gave her the name Mubu, which means sort of a little monkey that can climb trees very fast. So he would go out to find herbs in the forest to help take care of the villagers, especially who were sick. And so he was a very wise man who knew nature, and such a special thing to have a grandfather like this, because it absolutely set the way her life would go. And he would take her out, and as I say, I'm going to write about this in book two. He would take her out, and he would, even at 2 years of age, he would start to teach her about the trees, and he would say, you know, these trees have this kind of edible nut, this tree has this kind of fruit, but you shouldn't eat it. And he gathered a leaf from each tree, and she started, even at that young age, to keep a book in which every page had a different leaf. And I call that part of the story, her book of leaves. Wow. And this was the beginning, Veronica, of this incredible lifetime of getting to know and love nature. And so at 5 years of age, and this is what you know, these are all true stories, and it's fantastic. It's just great to listen to, like, tell these stories. And I think there's a picture on Facebook of me. It's so hard to get her to sit down to tell the stories. I think there's a picture of me on Facebook showing me lying on the wooden floor at the Elephant Nature Park that she founded in 1995. And she's sitting with a bunch of puppies in her lap, and she's telling me the story. But I have to get down, you know, I have to get down where she is and where she likes to be. And so she was busy running this this great park that she has, but
Peter, I want to ask you a question. Our listeners have not heard about this park before, you know, and you've described it to me, but can you just tell us a little bit about, I remember the first time you went to visit this park, and this is actually a park that rescues elephants, right?
Right, correct. Veronica, it's called the Elephant Nature Park, and again, your listeners can easily find a lot of material and on the internet and join the website that she has. It's about an hour. If people know somewhat about the major city of Chiang Mai in Thailand, it's about an hour north of Chiang Mai, which is the second largest Thai city and very popular with tourists. So you take a van from Chiang Mai and go up to this park. And the park has a river. It has mountains around it. It has about 35 elephants that she and her allies have rescued from abuse and injury and so forth, illness, and they've saved. And sometimes her supporters, her benefactors, who come from all over the world, have, you know, they put up $10,000, $15,000 to buy these ill-treated elephants from their owners, and so that they could be situated in the Elephant Nature Park, where nobody can ride an elephant. The elephants are allowed, encouraged to live normal elephant lives in this park. They're not ridden. They don't have to perform any circus tricks. They just live normally. And Veronica, it is such an incredible, miraculous thing to see. You know, every day of the year, practically, there's at least 15 people that show up. Very often, it's much more than that. It's 30 people, 40 people, and they have cabins that people pay. Come from all over the world. I've met people from South America, America, many Canadians, many Europeans, people from New Zealand, Australia, Korea, and so forth, Japan, come there to help the elephants. In fact, we have a cartoon series that you can, if you go to our website, I think, it will be up again very soon. It's called Elephant Gossip. And we even make some jokes in our cartoon series about the tourists who come to work for the elephants. People, you know, well-to-do people coming from Canada and England and Germany and so forth, and they go into the fields where they're growing corn or they're growing pumpkins, food for the elephants. And so these people working hard, under the hot sun to provide food for the elephants. And then every day, the elephants gather in this area where there's a walkway, and we tourists, or people like myself that are writers, researchers, we can get, you know, those baskets full of fruit and vegetables for each elephant, and we can feed them ourselves. That's quite a thrilling thing to do.
I'll bet it is. You've been up close with the elephants, the babies, and the adults.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Touched them, walked under them. Is it scary?
Lek and her staff are pretty careful about giving guidance to people. I would not say that it's scary, but some things can... I have seen some things happen, even to one of my own associates, who went up to the park, a Thai girl, and I'll tell you the story. I won't go into too much detail, but she's employed. She's an executive with Kennebec Entertainment, my company, and. We were introducing her to one of the most famous elephants called Hope, which had been an orphan baby that Lek raised, and Hope is somewhat a mischievous animal, even with other elephants. But everybody loves Hope, but you have he can be unpredictable. Let's put it that way. So my associate was with Lek actually, and one of the other experts on the elephants who lives up there. Actually, I'll mention her name, Jody Thomas from Michigan. Jody has come from Michigan, and now she lives. She's married a Burmese, and she has a child, and she lives basically next to the elephants out in the field in her bamboo home that's been built there. And Jody has rescued quite a few elephants as well. But anyway, my associate was feeding Hope corn with Lek and Jody, and people were taking pictures, and everything was great, and we have pictures. I think even today, folks, there's a picture of my associate being kissed by Hope. So if you go to Facebook, you might see that. Anyway, at the end of all this picture taking and all this jollity, the ladies were walking away, and Hope was sort of turning as they were leaving, and my associate saw a ear of corn lying on the ground, and she picked it up. And this is something like Lek didn't see it happening, and Hope swung his trunk and gave my associate a whack in the head because Hope felt that's my piece of corn. Why it's my ear of corn? Why are you taking it away? It all ended well, but it was a little bit shocking for them.
So,
when it all happened.
Yes, right. Was she startled? Was she hurt?
She was quite startled, and she wasn't really hurt. But we Lek takes care of everybody, and so we wanted to make sure, and we sent her to a nearby hospital just to be checked because we don't want the elephants hurting anybody. So that's I have been around Hope plenty of times, and nothing like that's ever happened. That just happens to be one of the little traits that elephants have. You know, great memory there may be 50 years of corn around, but if there's one lying on the ground that somehow got dropped, it belongs to the elephant.
You really have to understand the culture, just like with anybody, you know, any sentient being. You need to know the culture and what's considered to be rude, and what's not rude. It's just like with horses. You know, it's really important to understand that. Let's say you are brushing the horse, massaging the horse, petting the horse. Oftentimes they'll want to return the favor because that's what they would do with another horse. Unfortunately, though, their nip, the little love bites that they bless another horse with, can do damage to you as a person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, sometimes the intention is actually quite benevolent even, and it still can really hurt you.
Well, Lek has recently instituted signs on the walls at the elephant park showing people what not to do around elephants. They're very careful, but occasionally something can happen, and did in the case of my friend and associate. But she has remained extremely enthusiastic about Hope and the elephants in general. There's no mental, emotional scar left from the incident.
That's good. Speaking of emotional scars, we've got a rather touching story here I want to share. I had actually asked my friends on Facebook to share some of their animal stories, and Eric Johnson decided to take the invitation, and he wrote something here that I'm going to share. He says, in about third grade, I had a friend on my way home from school, a dog named King. He was confined to a little 8-foot by 10-foot fenced area beside the road. When I first saw him, all the other kids were kicking at the fence and throwing things, and day by day, the dog grew increasingly wild and savage. I decided I would make friends with him. I stood outside the fence and spoke to him until he stopped growling. I stepped closer and had to stop and talk again as he began to growl. After a few days of this, we got so far that he would lick my hand. I remember falling down on the playground one day and coming home with a dirty scrape, but when I stopped to talk to King, he gently licked it clean for me. He was my friend. Soon I was climbing into his pen each day to spend 10 to 20 minutes, but I had to wait until all the other kids had gone past because he would go wild from their teasing and he didn't seem safe at those times. He was poorly cared for, the pen was never cleaned, and his coat and health seemed to suffer. One day I came by and he wasn't there. The next day he wasn't there either. After a week or so, I dared to go and knock on the door. The animal control officer had come by and taken King as a dangerous animal, and he had been killed. It still makes me cry to this day. He was my first pet. Ah. I think we've lost Thailand.
See you. bbsradio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information.
Hey, I'm really sorry, guys, for that interruption there. You know, we are talking to Peter.
It's my fault, Veronica.
That's okay.
We're talking to
Peter Alexander in Thailand, and he's a long ways away. So, of course, it's a given that we might have some technical difficulties. Hopefully, as far as I understand, the reading of Eric Johnson's very touching story about his very first animal friend, I hope that we at least got that on the air, and I just wanted to say that I was very much touched by that story. Peter, I don't know that you got to hear it all, but
I heard up to the point where they had actually destroyed King.
Yes, so, well, that was pretty much the end, is that the animal control officer had taken King, and you know, I think it really opens up an interesting topic and one that we can talk about with the elephants as well, because I'm over at the page here on Elephant Nature Park, and I did post elephantnaturepark.org on my Facebook page for any of the listeners who want to click on that. It's already up there for easy access. But this whole idea that we seem to have that animals are not supposed to respond adversely to being abused, and the animal gets labeled as the problem when, in fact, its environment and the humans that are interacting with it are often the problem. I would imagine that when Elephant Nature Park is rescuing elephants, they probably encounter some of the same things. So so-called problem elephants who other people want to dispose of or destroy. And so could you talk to that a little bit?
Well, I can tell you one horrible story if that's okay.
Absolutely.
There was an elephant that Lex saved called Jokia, J-O-K-I-A. She's a female, and she was working I think on the Burmese side of the border, or could be back and forth between Burma and Thailand. Some years back, and she was a logging elephant, and she was pregnant, and they didn't give her any time off to have her baby. She delivered the baby while she was pulling logs on a hillside, and the baby rolled down the hillside as it came out of Jokia, and Jokia hurried, tried to get to it, and when she got to the baby, it was dead.
Oh, God.
And this so upset Jokia that she refused to work any longer. And so the owner and the mahout, you know, the mahout is the guy who lives basically with the elephant and rides it and directs it and so forth. The owner and the mahout on separate occasions tried intimidation to get Jokia back to work. And one of them, I forget which was which, but either the mahout or the owner used a slingshot to blind Jokia in one eye, and that didn't. And then they tried to beat her to get her to work, and she still wouldn't work. And then the owner, I think, shot an arrow and blinded Jokia in the other eye, and they tried to force her to work when she was blind, and she wouldn't work. And around that time, Lick had heard about Jokia and was able to buy her from her owner and return her and take her to the Elephant Nature Park. And it was a long, long ride in a truck for Jokia, and Jokia was extremely, extremely nervous. And it was a tough trip. Taking the blinded elephant to the Elephant Nature Park, where they finally got her there, and she was still in an extremely depressed state and extremely anxious, having been driven for many hours in a truck and in a new place. But to make a long story short, I think Jokey has been there at least 5 years, and she's been befriended by several other female elephants, and she lives a somewhat subdued life, but seemingly very, very, very happy to be there, and she's, you know, lives the way she wants to live now at the Elephant Nature Park. And this is a story of so many elephants. I personally saw an elephant called Maximus, who was at the time regarded as perhaps the tallest elephant in all of Thailand. And he had been a huge begging elephant that was hit by an 18-wheeled truck during the period that he was begging. And so he was somewhat crippled, but like God, a British man bought Maximus for the park, you know, like $10,000 or something like that, as a gift to his wife for her birthday. That's the way I recall the story. Anyway, Maximus lived at the park, very, very befriended by many of the other elephants, very, very popular among the other elephants. Despite his physical disabilities, he was able to walk around and so forth. And they believe he was around 70 years of age. And I happened to have been there the week that he died. And I was actually, I left the park before he died, but I saw gradually the problem related to his hind legs, due to the accident, due to being hit by the 18-wheel truck while begging, that gradually affected his ability to rise off the ground. You know, if he was sleeping or if he was resting his legs because it was hard to stand because he was very big. And gradually, you know, he died because he couldn't get up and take care of himself, and he had eventually had no desire to live any longer. But I was there when I saw the female elephants coming to try to help him to get up. And so you see the kind of concern, the kind of sympathy, the kind of feelings that elephants have for each other.
Well, and to go back, and I'm looking at the story about Jokia, and you were talking about how she lost her baby.
Yes.
And I see that it looks like she's had a baby since she came to the park. She has a little baby called Hope.
Hope is Jokia's baby?
Yeah.
Hope that I was telling you about?
Yes. It says right here in this picture, it says Jokia had Hope. Anyway, they're saying that she was pregnant and the baby was due in mid-2003.
I see. Yeah.
They felt that the only reason she would allow herself to get pregnant again is because she'd have to be happy at the elephant park. And it also said that she'd picked a midwife, her friend May Perm.
Yes, exactly.
Is May Perm another elephant?
Yes, a female elephant who befriended her when she first arrived, yes.
So do elephants pick midwives to help them with their babies then?
I don't know. I don't know that they picked them, but since they were best friends, yes, usually other female elephants do assist in birth. You may recall, Veronica, since you have read the screenplay that I wrote called The Earth Trembled,
yes,
that there is a scene where an elephant gives birth and the other female elephants that are around her are licking the baby and so forth. If you look
right.
at my screenplay again, you'll find that scene.
No, I definitely remember it. It's very interesting when we change the words. We use words that we ordinarily reserve for humans, and we use them for animals. I think one of the things that's so fascinating about that is how it helps us to see the similarities that we have. and to build those connections instead of continuing to objectify them as others so that we don't have to be impacted by the reality of their emotional lives, because they do have emotional lives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Veronica. And I think you know a little bit about the fact that I saved a kitten that we call Channel at the school, and her mother is a street cat that I have been feeding for over 2 years. And I was determined that Channel would not live the kind of life that her mother and the other cat that fathered her have been living. And so I have taken care of Channel, and I found her a good home, and every time I see her, she's happy, and she knows nothing but good things in her life, and the difference between how she's living now and her parents, who I still see and feed every day, and I see the change even in those street cats, the parents, from the first time I saw them, when they were, they wanted food, but they would attack me if I was proved to be an enemy, but they've gotten to know me as a provider, and they're quite affectionate with me.
Yeah. Now speaking back about the children's book, one of the things that I love about this book is that it has a beautiful message, as often is the case with children's book. It's imparting a certain amount of wisdom or life lessons, but it does so in a way that is very inviting. It's not overbearing. It's not lecturing. It's very fun. I just wonder if you could talk a little bit, since you work with, educating children all the time, talk a little bit about that and what you...
Veronica, the thing that motivated me the most in writing this book, and by the way, people can buy the book. I think it's very inspiring for children and grandchildren and so forth. They can either go to our website, which is kennebec7.com, which is named for a particular river that inspired me a long time ago when I was a kid, which is the Kennebec River in Maine. So we're called the kennebec7.com, or they can buy the book from Lex Elephant Nature Park, where it's also being sold, and donating a good portion of our profits to the Elephant Nature Park. Anyway, so those are two ways you can buy the book for Christmas, either at our website, kennebec7.com, or from the Elephant Nature Park. And I guess you have the specific website address there, Veronica?
Oh, yeah. It's up on Facebook.
Okay. So in answer to your question, I see time is probably getting a little tight. Let me say that in the 1970s, I wrote and directed a documentary film, which was quite famous in that period of time, the 70s, called The Animals Are Crying. It was about the overpopulation of cats and dogs and what kind of remedies for that problem there are. And what I found out later was that a woman was quite taken by my film, and she made sure that thousands of children got to see this film in school, and she still had the stack of essays that kids wrote about my film and how inspired they were. And then the end result was, when I checked with Humane Society of the United States, which was one of the sponsors of the film, they said that there was a drastic reduction in the overpopulation and euthanization of cats and dogs in the 3 years following the production of this film. So they did credit my film for having motivated children's understanding of that particular overpopulation problem. So I would hope, and what I try to do with Mubu and Mumu, by the way, folks, is a given that Mubu's grandfather saved when Mubu was 5 years of age, and he gave the responsibility of helping heal Mumu to Mubu. And so a five-year-old girl helped rehabilitate this baby gibbon whose hand was caught in a poacher's trap. And ultimately, they were able to return Mumu to her family in the forest. And Lek was telling me some stories recently about how she would go back to check on Mumu in the forest and something about that relationship. So what I'm trying to do is aim the book at children to inspire them that they too can make a difference. Some people have written to us about now that the children have read the book, they want to go, you know, when they see an injured bird in the street, they want to help save the bird and things like that. So that's really what I want to do, is to change the consciousness or the perspective of children about animals. And you know, if Mubu, Lek Shilert, could do all the things that she did when she was 5 and 6 and 7 to heal the various animals. I mean, she helped heal a gibbon, an owl, and other animals that we will be writing about in the coming months. There will be a series of six books, and they're told in the first person, pretty much the way Lek told me the stories herself.
Well, I think they're beautiful, Peter. I really do, and I think that, you know, I love the idea that we can entertain and delight our children at the same time, helping them to be compassionate and constructive, you know, people who do
Absolutely.
Good things.
Yes.
Do, you know, less anger, less bullies, less rage, more love. I'm all for
this
it.
This is what we have to do, Veronica. Individually, we have to take responsibility for our relationships with animals. And I see, you know, like I said, I go along my street and I feed unwanted or street animals, and I do various things to help them along. You know, it's not a lot. It's 5 or 6 dogs and 2 or 3 cats. But the Thai people who used to not take very good care of, say, the cat, I can see a household where now they're proud. That same household that didn't take care of their cat very well 3 years ago now are proud of the cat that they are raising. They buy a collar for her, and she's happy and affectionate, and they mm-hmm. see the cat in a different light because I showed them the way that I cared about
yeah.
the cat that was begging in front of their house.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's something you and I really share, is our love of animals, and I think our deep-rooted belief that, you know, as long as we're able to treat animals in a cruel or inconsiderate way, then, you know, this world is not a very bright place to live. And it also, you know, definitely generalizes to the way we treat people. We are out of time, Peter, so just one last word from you about where they can get the book. Great stocking stuffer for any child in your life. Peter, where should they buy their copy of Mubu and Mumu?
Mubu and Mumu, The Little Animal Doctor, available at kennebec7.com, K-E-N-N-E-B-E-C, 7, the number 7. .com, or Lex Elephant Nature Park is selling it. You can order it online, or if you're lucky enough to go to the Elephant Nature Park, you can buy the book in their bookstore. It's also we have translated it into Portuguese, and we expect it to be available in Portuguese in the future, and it will become a series of six books.
All right, Peter, thank you so much for joining me in the Shame-Free Zone. I thank you so much for everything that you're doing to make this world a better place. I love you dearly. And that's it for the Shame-Free Zone, guys. Thanks for putting up with our technical difficulties.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. It's amazing we can talk this far away. All right.
Yes.
All right, that's it from the Shame-Free Zone. We're going to sign off, and I will see you here next Monday. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.